Welcome to the Revitalize My Church podcast, created to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. Here's the host of the show, Bart Blair.
Welcome to another episode of the Revitalize My Church podcast. My name is Bart Blair. I'm the director of church revitalization for a ministry called Assist Church Expansion, and it is my privilege to welcome you to another episode of our show. We've been producing this podcast for about half a year now with the intent of helping churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. Regardless of where your church might be, if you are in a season of revitalization or renewal or revisioning, we hope that the content that we're creating for you here is helping you. Today's episode is one that I'm really excited about. It is a little bit different than the content that we have been producing up to this point. I'm excited to introduce you to my friend, Eric Hoke. Eric and I have known each other, I think, for about 5 or 6 years. He is a pastor, a church planter. He's worked in the marketplace, and now he is a published author. His new book is called Market Street Pastor. And his book is really a look at ministry in a way that I think most of us probably ignore. Eric is what I would consider to be an expert in bivocational and co-vocational ministry. Why is he an expert? Well, number one, he's been a co-vocational pastor for many years of his ministry life. He has also coached and counseled many other church leaders and churches on what it means to be a bivocational or a co-vocational pastor. The book that he's written creates a really great case biblically for co-vocational ministry, but also is very, very tactical to help pastors who may want to approach ministry from a co-vocational or bivocational perspective. Eric is a great guy. I think you're going to get a lot out of this particular episode. And I hope that you will go over to his website, ihelppastorsgetjobs.com. You can subscribe to his newsletter, receive other articles and emails and things that he writes that are designed to help people navigate this whole idea of bivocational and co-vocational ministry. And also buy a copy of his book. Eric is a guy just like the rest of us who is trying to raise a family, do ministry, work a full-time job. And the fact that he's taken the time to write this book, and I really think it is very helpful. Love for him to sell some copies. So if you're listening to this and you haven't bought a copy yet, swing over to ihelppastorsgetjobs.com and buy a copy of the book. Well, that's it for my intro this week. If you haven't yet subscribed wherever you're listening to this podcast, make sure that you do that. If you're watching on our YouTube channel, please give us a like, subscribe to our channel, and go ahead and leave us a comment on the YouTube video. I'll be happy to engage with you there. And if you're looking for more helpful resources as it relates to church revitalization, click over to our website, revitalizemy.church, and we've got some tools, some resources, articles, and of course, all of our podcast episodes are posted there. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's episode. Here's my interview with Eric Hoke. Well, I'm so happy to introduce my friend, Eric Hoke, to the Revitalize My Church podcast. Eric, thanks so much for hanging out with me today.
Bart, it's my pleasure to be here, man.
You and I have been connected to each other through ministries and a mutual friend over the course of the last few years. I've watched your journey from afar, which is even just in the few years that you and I have known each other it's been quite a journey. And then the more I learn about your ministry life and your ministry journey, there have been a lot of adventures in your young life. Why don't you share with our audience a bit of your story, how you ended up in ministry, a little bit about sort of your ministry journey and how you ended up doing what you're doing today, which, by the way, for those that are listening to the podcast, we're talking about a book that Eric has recently published called Market Street Pastor. And we're going to dig into the details of that book here in just a few minutes, but let's let Eric set it up by sharing a bit of his story.
Yeah, thanks so much, Bart. So backstory is I grew up in a small town, Pennsylvania. I grew up in kind of a nominal Christian home. I had an uncle who was a Baptist youth pastor who really invested in me and led me to Christ at 16. I was baptized shortly thereafter and kind of felt the call, as we say in some of our circles, to church ministry. So I went to Bible college, seminary, did that whole trajectory and path. Was a full-time youth pastor and then a full-time executive pastor until I kind of got bit by the Tim Keller bug to go plant a church in a large city, which is what my wife and I did in New York City in the Bronx. We relocated there in 2014, attended a local church plant where I was able to learn from that pastor and learn about ministry in that context that was radically different than where I grew up in a 5,000-person town in the middle of Pennsylvania. But after 3 years of kind of learning from him and some others in the city, planted All Saints Church. Started off in our living room and kind of grew from there. And we officially launched in 2017. And it was didn't take a genius to figure out that there was not a whole lot of money in planting in one of the most disenfranchised communities in America while simultaneously living in the most expensive city in the world. So I thought, you know, I've been to Bible college seminary, I've been a full-time pastor, but, you know, I'll do this whole Bivo Covo thing for a few years. Then once the church kind of blossoms and grows, then I'll go full-time and quote unquote, be a real pastor again. Well, the joke was kind of on me because after 7 years and one pandemic, we never got to a place to support a full-time pastor. But I realized in that season that this was actually God's plan all along for me to have a church ministry, but then also a ministry in and for the marketplace. So one of the unique things that happened in that journey was when COVID-19 kind of swept through New York City, churches, particularly church plants that are meeting in schools and public places, shut down for a very long time, could not meet in person for a very long time, I should say. And as a result, a lot of churches like mine did not make it. The pastor ran out of money, or the church body kind of, you know, disassembled. But All Saints, the church that I led, even though we were not the largest by any stretch of the imagination, certainly not the most wealthy by any stretch of the imagination, survived, and not only survived, but planted two other churches through that season. So a mentor of mine had reached out. He goes, you know, Eric, this is going to sound kind of crazy, but I'm getting calls all the time from guys who are leaving the city. They're going back to their hometowns, their home states. After COVID, and you're still here. And I think a big part of that is because you figured out how to sustain your ministry through a marketplace job. I think you should teach other pastors how to do that. And to be fair, like, bivocational is not like a brand new thing. It's been around for a very, very long time. It's very common amongst Black and Hispanic pastors as well. It's just as, you know, white guys are a little bit slower to learn that this is kind of the way to lead churches in a lot of our contexts in which we're ministering to. But inner city, rural ministry, pretty common. So I told my mentor, my friend, I'm like, listen, no one's going to care about that. But to make a long story short, a few folks did. And that was in 2022. And I started IHelpPastorsGetJobs.com, began kind of coaching and resourcing pastors. How do you think differently about ministry, differently about bivocational, co-vocational? How do you sustain your ministry, you know, long-term? And that was the genesis of Marcus Street Pastor. So that is kind of the 3-minute version. There's any string you want to pull on, I'm happy to, but that is how I ended up doing what I'm doing now.
Okay. It's very exciting. And I'm really excited for you. I've watched the journey from the initiation of, hey, I've got a few people on Twitter that are responding to my tweets who are looking for help, to IHelpPastorsGetJobs.com being birthed, and you built an email list and you have a newsletter that's going out. And that turned into the opportunity to write this book. One of the things I want to do as we get started here is start with some definitions. You do this in the book. And I want to start by sharing a little story with you. That I think will set this up pretty well. I was working with a church a few years ago that was going through a pastoral transition. They'd had the same pastor for, I think, 30, 35 years. That pastor had passed away suddenly. The church, most of the members of the church, had never been through a pastoral search process before. And when I went in and started working with them, we were working to try to help them revitalize, to find a new way forward. And part of that process was helping them identify who the pastor was going to be that they were going to call to do this. As we started working on their finances, their budget, what they were able to offer in terms of a salary, one of the things that I realized was that they simply didn't have enough money in their budget for a full-time salary. They had some other resources available that I had encouraged them to try to make available to top up salary, but they were unwilling to do so. So I kept telling them, I said, I think you're going to have to shift your focus from having a full-time pastor to having a bivocational pastor. We had this conversation for months and months and months. They were frustrated with me. They finally gave me the boot and said, we don't want to work with you anymore. We're tired of hearing you say that we need a bivocational pastor. So what ends up happening here is I begin peeling back the layers, having some follow-up conversations and trying to figure out what's happening. And this is what I realized. When I was using the term bivocational, what I was meaning was the pastor is going to work part-time for the church, and he's going to have a part-time or maybe even full-time job outside the church to support his family and to meet his family's needs. What they were hearing when they heard the word bivocational, which never even occurred to me, was that a bivocational pastor is a pastor who pastors two different congregations. Here's okay. What's interesting. The son of their former pastor is a mainline pastor who pastored three small rural congregations. And so when they were hearing the term bivocational, what they were hearing was, we're going to share our pastor with another church, which means he can't be here to preach every week. When they were saying they wanted a full-time pastor, what they really meant was, we want the same guy preaching every Sunday. Not that we want somebody who's in the office 40 hours a week, every single week, but we want the same guy preaching every Sunday. And I realized in that moment that definitions matter.
They do.
The understanding of the terminology. And so you've already used the terms bivocational and co-vocational. For the sake of our conversation and for those that I hope are going to buy and read the book, define those for us. Explain what bivocational and co-vocational are. How do they differ?
Yeah. I mean, that's a very interesting story. And I'm glad that you got that sorted, because you're right. There are some churches out there where you're pastoring three country churches of 10 to 20 people. And that's kind of what they mean by bivocational. So when I say bivocational, what I mean is you have a pastor. He only pastors your church, but he has a second job. To your point, Bart, maybe it's part-time, maybe it's full-time, could be either of those. But if he's bivocational, the goal is to eventually make him full-time at the church. So with that being said, like, he'll be working the second job for a season, but as the church grows, as more money comes in, he'll quit that job and focus fully on the church as his vocation. Like, that's the end goal. A co-vocational pastor is somebody who says, I have a church that I pastor, and then I have another job, part-time or full-time, and even if the church could afford me full-time, I'm going to keep the part-time or full-time job because I view that as my ministry as well. So my ministry is not just to the church, it's also to the marketplace. So the distinguishing factor is co-vocational is a strategy that I'm going to employ indefinitely. Bivocational is a strategy I'm going to employ temporarily. The other layer to add into this is that you cannot function as a co-vocational pastor with a bivocational mindset. Mm-hmm. What do I mean by that? Bivocational mindset says, yeah, we're all going to chip in and kind of help the pastor because we know he's working another job. So maybe you have an elder preach once a month, or maybe you have another elder lead a Sunday school and the pastor doesn't, and you understand, well, yeah, but this is only for a year until we get enough money coming in. Co-vocational says that those elders, those deacons, those volunteers, no, they're going to lead at a high capacity indefinitely. Like, this is how our church is going to operate. We talked before we pressed record, Bart, about the team approach to ministry. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have your pastor, but you also have others with him that are helping him fulfill the duties of the ministry, which is what, you know, Ephesians 4:12 teaches, right? So I think that's the distinguishing factor. Co-vocational is, we're all in this together. This is our long-term strategy. It's not, let's get enough money coming in so our pastor can quit and be full-time focus on us. The focus is, how can we work as a collective to make an impact?
Okay. Now, as I've followed you over the years, and even as I read the book, I don't hear you saying that bivocational ministry is a bad thing, that it's bad for a pastor to have to work or need to work a part-time job for a season in hopes to become a full-time pastor. But what I'm reading, as much as anything else, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you are really a champion, an advocate for co-vocational ministry, where the pastor isn't dependent on the church for income, for his primary source of income. And that's the game plan. That's the plan, short-term, long-term, and everything in between. Why do you feel like that's such a, let me just ask you, why are you so passionate about that? Why do you think that it is such an important thing for churches and for pastors to consider?
Yeah. And you read me right, Bart. Some people I might read one tweet that I put out and think that Eric hates full-time pastors. I don't. I was a full-time pastor. Or Eric doesn't like bivo guys. And if you go full-time in church, you're somehow less of a pastor. Not at all. Listen, we all have different callings, giftings, and even seasons. As I shared at the beginning, I was full-time for a considerable amount of time, and I enjoyed that season of ministry as well. Why I'm a big fan of co-vocational is a variety of reasons. So we'll start at the top and work our way down. The top reason why I'm a big fan of co-vocational ministry is that it helps the pastor to not get kind of sucked into the tunnel vision of, like, church is my identity. Church is all I do. Church is what I think about 24/7. And it gives him access to the broader community, gives him access to people who are not believers, to work environments where he's not the person in charge, places in which he can just kind of get out. I found this interesting stat. I don't know the source. Maybe you can put it in the show notes. But actually, co-vocational pastors are less likely to leave ministry than full-time pastors. It kind of got me thinking, like, well, why is that? And I had a friend tell me, because co-vocational pastors leave ministry every single week. Like, they leave church ministry every single week. They go to a mental space where they're not thinking about it. So, like, for the sake of the pastor's well-being, having something that he does outside of just the church helps make him a better pastor, because now he has a better understanding of what do my people experience as Christians every single day, kind of in the marketplace. When I was a full-time pastor and I got there to preach on a Sunday, I didn't know what Bob, who worked in IT, or Katie, who was a school teacher, what was his or her week like during the week? I had no idea. My week was spent writing sermons and looking up things in Greek, which I didn't do very often because I'm not very good at that. But that was our worlds were so separate that it was very hard for me to relate to them in any tangible way. So that is kind of the first one. The second one is that this then empowers the church body to be activated for mission. You know, what we have experienced, Bart, in the last, I don't know, 100 years or so, you know better than I would, is a church model that says, hey, church is a building you go to or a place you go to on Sunday. You kind of see the professional up front preaching. You kind of give a tithe or offering for religious goods and services. Then you get in your car and you go to Cracker Barrel and you go home. And most of Christians are not activated to live on mission or live in ministry because they say, well, we pay our pastor to do that. When I was pastoring All Saints Church, we were a completely mobile church. We met inside of an elementary school in the South Bronx of New York City. I never once had to twist the arm of a church member to help me tear down a service. Why? Because they knew Eric's going to wake up tomorrow morning, shower, shave, put on a suit, hop on a train, and go to his job just like I am tomorrow morning. So therefore, let's pitch in together. Let's all do this work together. And the third, let's just be super practical here, is cost of living is only getting higher. Inflation is outrageous. And, you know, let's just say $50,000 salary in 2024 is not what $50,000 salary was in 2014. And for a lot of our churches, and this includes mine, if you have a $90,000 a year budget or $100,000 a year budget, how much of that really can go to a pastoral salary? And how can a family, particularly if a married man with children, live off 30, 40K a year? It's just not sustainable for most of us.
Yeah. So if you happen to be listening to this podcast or watching and you are part of an elder team, church leadership team, maybe your church is in a transition and you're trying to figure out if and when to call a new pastor and should that person be full-time, part-time, bivocational, co-vocational, but your desire, I know most churches are going to desire to have a full-time pastor. Like that's the desire of the church most of the time, which is why I told you before we started recording that I think the next book you need to write is for the church, so that they can see a biblical case for what, you know, bivocational or co-vocational ministry ought to look like. Colossians chapter 3, end of 3, beginning of 4, somewhere around there, we see God's house rules for those who are followers of Jesus. And Paul writes about, you know, the marriage relationship, the parent-child relationship. He talks about the slave-master relationship. And this is a passage that I want church leaders to look at, because one of the things that the master is supposed to do for the slave is to treat them well, which I think means compensating them well. And the reality is if you as a pastor or as a church, an elder team, a board, can't compensate your pastor well, if you can't treat them well, if it's not fair, and by fair, I mean, not better than what other churches in the community are paying the pastor, but what everybody in the community is earning as a whole, then you might need to consider a co-vocational or a bivocational scenario. You know, it's tough. It's a difficult conversation to have. It's very sensitive. But I don't want to get into the church conversation. I want to focus on your book. Okay. Let me come back here.
Hold on. This is a really good string to pull on, because I had a conversation with a full-time pastor, rural pastor, a rural United States pastor, and his church can't afford to keep him full-time. He's married, he has 4 kids, and he has a unique skill that he can make money part-time, half-time. And he's gone to the board. He's like, hey, listen, guys, like, we ran the numbers. we're bleeding money out of our reserves. I can go work 20 hours a week, 10 hours a week, and make some extra money. That puts less of a burden on the church. We can put more money back into ministry. And like they didn't want to do that. And this is for the church leader, and this might hurt someone's feelings. And I'm sorry, Bart, for hurting your listeners' feelings. But one of the church elders said, well, let's take a look at your family budget and see where you can cut. And like that's crazy. And this guy is not driving a Tesla and living in a 5,000 square foot house. I can tell you that much. And what they said to this pastor, who wants to like sustain this ministry, who's willing to make some very real sacrifices, is, well, you know, your daughter's ballet lessons are $100 a month and your son's little league is like $80 a month. You can cut those. That was their solution to this. As opposed to him going get a part-time job, they said your kids should do less normal kid activities. I want to put it out there. If that's your strategy as a church leader, maybe it's time to rethink your strategies.
Okay. I don't want to pick on and beat up church leaders, but I will say this. I think this is in the book that you've written. One of the things that you address are objections as to why someone would not want to be a co-vocational pastor. And I think this is, I think one of the objections, it's objection number five, I have a note here, which is co-vocational ministry is an admission of failure. And I think that that runs on both lanes. It's an admission of failure on the part of the church, feeling like they can't meet the needs of their pastor to provide enough for him to be full-time. Or it's an admission of failure on the part of the pastor to say, I tried to be full-time ministry, but it's just not working for me, and I have to be co-vocational, or I have to work in the marketplace. Why don't you take a minute to speak to the person who might in their gut feel like having to work a job, I spent all my years, I went to Bible college, I went to seminary, I was going to be a pastor, that's what my identity is tied up in, as you said before, but now I'm going to go and get a market street job, a marketplace job, and continue doing ministry in the church. How do I not feel like a failure if I make that move?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the first question that I'd ask, it's always sometimes better to ask questions and give advice, but I think I would ask that pastor of like, where's the case that you would make, whether it's scriptural or even your polity of the particular church that you are a part of or the seminary training you received that informed that, like that told you if you're a part-time pastor, you're a half-time pastor, you're somehow less than. Like, let's just kind of start there. Let's untangle that. And I think for a lot of us, and this was my own journey as well, I think a lot of it boiled down to my own pride and my own ego, and realizing, you know what, like there has been a 2,000 year history of Christianity, and God has used full-time pastors, part-time pastors, lay leaders, ordinary Christians for his redemptive purpose in the world. And for me to think that somehow, some way, if I fall out of the category of being a full-time pastor, I'm somehow less than, in my view, it's pride and ego. And I talk about this in the book as well. I came from a tradition where full-time clergy, missionaries, people who just gave their whole life to full-time vocational church ministry, mission work, they're kind of like the Navy SEALs of Christians. Like they're this elite force, they're the best of the best. They have this honor that they deserve. And then the rest of us are kind of the second class Christians. Yet New Testament teaches something totally different, right? That we're all, you know, called to ministry. We're all called to walk out of and live out our faith. And there are pastors that are called to pastor and shepherd people. There's also evangelists, and there's also teachers. There's also, you know, apostles. And like, even back to our earlier conversation, Bart, before we pressed record, like, I planted a church because I'm someone who's apostolic, but I'm not necessarily someone who's going to be pastoral at that same church for 40 years. And there's likely a time in my life where I felt like, well, I must be a failure because I didn't do what some pastors do, like someone like Jim Cimbala or Pete Scazzaro. These are people I really admire who stayed at the same church for 40 years. But God hasn't called someone to do that. I mean, God didn't call the Apostle Paul to stay at the Church of Corinth for 40 years. He called him to go there, establish a work, and then move on. So that's kind of how I would encourage someone to think through that. Who told you that? Is that scriptural, or is that pride and ego speaking? And then what does that say to the men and women who aren't full-time in ministry? Does that mean that you think they're less than as well? Just pulling on a string a little bit, we recognize pretty quickly, I guess, that does kind of fall apart pretty easily.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about something I think you address in the book, and you may not connect the dots exactly the way that I'm going to connect them here. But one of the things I think makes pastors or church leaders feel like they're a failure if they're not full-time in ministry is because they think they have to take a job that they're actually not going to like or not going to enjoy. And that is one of the things that you do address in the book, which is, you know, I've got a quote highlighted here. You're talking about a guy named Richie. Richie would have hated driving a school bus or working as a bank teller simply based on God's wiring for his life. So it wouldn't make sense for Richie to quit his pastor job to go be a full-time bus driver or full-time bank teller because he would probably be miserable and be longing to get back into the ministry the whole time. How do you coach pastors to think about opening up their worldview of what the possibilities are, what they could be doing, what they might be doing, that actually might fulfill some of the desires that God has built into them, even if the work that they're doing vocationally is not in the local ministry? It's not church work.
Yeah. So I'm going to do the thing that every author does and do a shameless plug for the book. So here it goes. Shameless plug in the book is that with the purchase of the book, you also get a free assessment that I developed that helps you understand how has God uniquely wired you and what are the ways in which, what are the jobs in which I would thrive as a person. Okay, so not to get too deep into the weeds here, but essentially there's two or three things that if you kind of figured these out, that would help you narrow down what sort of job you should explore. The first one is, are you more introverted or are you more extroverted? Like that's the most obvious one. If you're someone who's more introverted, you would love that drive the school bus job, right? You get the kids on, make sure they're okay, but most of your day is focused on the road and making sure you're driving safely. If you're extroverted, you'd prefer a job in sales or something of that nature where you're talking to people all day, every day. The second one, do you like working on a team or do you like working with people? Are you more of like, I'm by yourself. Are you more like heads down, research, writing, just this is what I want to do. I want to be alone with my thoughts all day, every day. Or I want to be in meetings, on teams, you know, collaborating on Zoom all day, every day. Like that's kind of the other one. Like, do I like working alone or with other people, kind of in the same lane as introversion, extroversion. And the last one is, do I want a fast paced, dynamic kind of startup environment or do I want like a slow and steady wins the race environment? And there's like a few other ones that kind of can color in the lines, but like those are the three: teamwork, introversion, speed in which you want to work. So that assessment kind of helps you evaluate which one of these environments would I thrive in. But then even one step beyond that, and I don't know if you, how deep you want to go, is we have like four paths within those that would make sense for the pastor. The first is the heart, not-for-profit work. The second is the head, learning and development. The third is the hands, project management. And the fourth is sales. And a lot of that's based on your wiring and your personality and how God has uniquely gifted you. I think for a lot of pastors, unfortunately, we don't take the time to really think through what sort of work environment would I enjoy being in. I was with a pastor earlier who wants to leave his church job. And the reason why he wants to leave his church job is because things just move too slow. It's like, well, maybe it's not anything wrong with the job. Maybe you're just, you know, the wrong part of the organization or the wrong seat on the bus, to use Jim Collins' language. Figure out a place where you can work with a little more speed, a little bit more dynamism, you might be happier in your position.
Yeah, for a very short period of time in the last church that I pastored and co-planted, I was bivocational for a very short period of time. And it was bivocational because the plan had been that I would eventually move to staff full time, which I eventually did. But I had two different jobs during that season. And I approached both of them as a means to an end. If I could rewind the clock, I probably would have approached it very, very differently. If I'd read your book 10 years ago, 11 years ago, I would have approach it very differently. The first job that I took was working in I was working in a pharmacy that still processed film from people who used film cameras. Like it is a very, very tail end of that world. And my job was literally going into a lab every day for 8 hours and processing people's photos. I hated that job. I hated being stuck in that little lab all by myself. I hated having to just sit there and use the machine and put people's film in and then print their pictures. I hated it. The other job that I had for a short time was I got hired as a contractor by a company that developed a content management system, websites, essentially for school districts. And I got to go into the schools and train the staff in the schools on how to use the software. Loved that job. Why? Okay. Because as a pastor, I have a natural gifting as a teacher. I love to help people. And I found that when I was in that environment and I was with people and I was training them and I was teaching them, that I loved it. I loved the feedback. I loved the interaction. I loved the rapport. So I think one of the big challenges that pastors have when they start thinking about being a co-vocational pastor, I've not trained to do anything else. All I've ever learned how to do is exegete Greek and Hebrew and you know, and write sermons and preach sermons. Do I even have any transferable skills and gifts? This is one of the areas that you address in the book. Why don't you speak a little bit to some of the experiences that you've had with pastors, helping them look in their own toolbox and see what transferable skills that they actually have from the marketplace that they've learned in the context of church and ministry?
Yeah. There's a few paths to explore. The first one is that for the pastor listening who maybe is very junior in his career, maybe a youth pastor for 2 years, fresh out of seminary, he's going to be at a very different place in the marketplace than someone who's been an executive or a lead pastor of a mega church for 20 years. So I think that's actually probably the bigger barrier. I think sometimes that 2 years as a youth pastor sees that, you know, executive director of a $2 million nonprofit and thinks, oh, communication, leadership, team building, fundraising, I've done all that. I've thrown a few pizza parties. I can make that job happen. Where I have to kind of temper some pastor's expectations of, like, you have to kind of slow down a little bit and be realistic at the real valuable work experience you've had versus what they're kind of looking for. We've also, on the flip side of that, have seen pastors who have had those very senior roles and have moved into chief operating officers of companies and, you know, senior leaders making a heck of a lot of more money than they were making prior to ministry. We've seen certainly that happen. So when it comes to actually skills themselves, I mean, what hasn't a pastor done, Bart, right? Starting with, we're going to do communication, leadership, team building, negotiation, raising money, managing a board, you know, marketing, like project management and planning. I mean, you know, people don't like the word sales and ministry, but if you're saying, hey, we want everyone to come out for this, you know, block party we're going to do, we want you to come and be a part of this community outreach, like you're selling that idea to your congregants and we're going to have them, you know, come be a part of it. Like you said, teaching, facilitating, training. I mean, I think most pastors I work with, I'd say the vast majority of them, they undersell themselves and what they're able to do as opposed to overselling themselves. So I think, you know, that it has more to do with, let's focus on a niche that you can really work that niche and don't try to be a generalist, because what gets callbacks for jobs are you being as specialized as possible. Not saying I'm a yellow belt in 100 things, saying I'm actually pretty good at these two or three things. I actually enjoy them. That's like the first step to finding a really good job.
Okay, we're coming up on the end of our time. I have so much more that I want to unpack with you, but I think there's one area that we need to address so that we can really at least get people to, I want them to get the book. I want them to read the book. Even your own story, Eric, you talk through the experience that you had in training. I'm assume it's for the company that you are currently working for, doing the training that you do, and just sharing your own story there. I'm like, well, of course you did well in the 45 minute presentation that you had to do, because you've been doing 45 minute presentations for years and all the other people in your class have not, right? So right. You win, even though you may have felt insecure about what you were doing. And for those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about, you have to read the book to hear Eric's story there.
Thank you, Bear.
Okay.
Thank you,
Bart. Okay. So the last question that I want to ask you as it relates to this whole idea of co-vocational ministry, which I think is the elephant in the room, that is, if I'm working a full-time job, 40 plus hours a week outside of the church, how in the world do I get the job in the church done? How do I find time to write a sermon? How do I lead the ministries? How do I lead the people in the church? How do I do hospital visits? How do I do weddings and funerals? How in the world do I scale my life in a way that I'm able to actually fulfill all the responsibilities that a pastor has in a church if I'm working another full-time job?
Yeah, that is the elephant in the room. And just before we press stop recording, I definitely want to come back for round two if and when you ever want to have me, Bart, to keep talking about this. I love spending time with you. The answer is, in short, you don't, and you can't. And kind of going back to the earlier question, what's a co-vocational pastor? It's not just, I have another job and I do business as usual. It's a whole paradigm shift where the team is working together to fulfill those duties of ministry. So you're right. If you're working 40 hours a week and you're trying to preach every Sunday. You're trying to lead multiple ministries. You're trying to lead a board or a staff or volunteers. You're trying to go to every hospital visit and every wedding and funeral. You're going to burn out in 3 months and you're going to send me an angry email and I'm going to feel bad about myself. So please don't do that. I had a previous podcast I was on asked me a really good question. It's kind of in the same vein as this. If you could put a warning label on Marcus Street Pastor, what would it be? And a warning label would say, do not do business as usual if you apply the principles of this book because it's impossible. So I think for the elder or the church leader listening to this, you might be sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, this is great. This could solve a lot of my problems. It could help me meet people in the community. Your first step is not get a resume done and go out and find a job. Your first step is making a 3-column system. And the first column says, what are things only I can do? The second column is, what are things I can delegate? And the third column is, what are things I can go that need to go away? And I think for some of us in ministry, and this is where I'm going to step on a toe or two, and I apologize in advance, is I think sometimes we spend so much time in that third column. These are things that, like, yeah, they're important to get done, but they're more nice to have than actual critical moving the mission forward tasks and duties. And there's a lot of things that delegate pile that we have an elder in a church or a lay leader in our church. They'd be more than happy to take that on for you. But we haven't given it up because we feel like, well, since I'm full-time, like, I have to do this thing. It could be as simple as folding the bulletins for Sunday or something like, you know, scheduling the social media posts for the week, whatever it is. These are things that you can delegate to people in your church that'd be happy to help accommodate those. And then there are certain things that only you as a pastor can do. But when you make this list, you're going to realize, oh, this is actually a lot shorter than I thought it was. And like one of the things that we did at our church, and not everybody has this as this luxury, and that's okay. But even our church plant, which was a small church, like I did not preach 50 Sundays out of the year. I preached maybe 30 to 35. I had an associate pastor that preached 10 to 15. We brought in an occasional guest speaker, and we even had some lay leaders give a sermon every now and again. Not that everybody can do that. I understand that. I'm sensitive to that. But I think even that big rock by itself to say, do I have to be the only voice my people hear 52 Sundays out of the year? Maybe you feel like, yeah, I do. That's part of my duty. Okay. Like, I'm not going to tell you how to run your church, but at the same time, realizing what are the unique things that only I can do as a pastor, zero in on those, the rest delegate or eliminate.
There are so many things in the book and in Eric's philosophy for co-vocational, bivocational ministry that we didn't even scratch the surface on here. So I do want to make sure that those of you who are listening know how you can get a copy of the book. You go to ihelppastorsgetjobs.com, and I will include that in the show notes. Eric would love for you to order a copy of the book directly from him, and he'd be happy. He walks to the mailbox and puts it in the slot on his own. I've seen pictures of him at the post office. He would love to mail you a copy of the book. You can subscribe to his newsletter. He sends out a weekly, is it weekly? I think it's weekly.
Yep, every
a weekly
Monday,
newsletter.
Yeah.
I'm subscribed from multiple email addresses. I don't know how I ended up doing that, but I get like multiple copies of it every week. And Eric is a great resource. So if you're a person who needs some coaching and consulting in terms of a vocational transition, he offers that service. If you're sitting there thinking, maybe I should look at becoming a co-vocational pastor, or maybe that's the next season for me. Maybe you're a church leader listening to this and thinking, okay, we're going to have to hire a co-vocational pastor, but we need to figure out our ministry strategy. That's what I want to help you with. You can reach out to me, and I'd love to work with you and your team to figure out how to structure your ministry plan and your ministry strategy so that you are not solely dependent on a paid professional Christian to run and lead your ministry. One of my favorite authors of the day is Hugh Halter, who wrote a book called The Tangible Kingdom. If you haven't read that, you should read that. One of the things that Hugh has done is he's planted churches as a co-vocational pastor, painting houses. That's his career and his therapy, I think it sounds like, based on the way that he writes about it. But one of the things that he says is that the church needs to see itself as a sent body, not just as a sending body. We all collectively as the church are part of the mechanism that God wants to use to expand his kingdom and to reach people in our community. And therefore, it requires all of us being involved. But we've grown dependent on the senior pastor, the lead pastor, as being the one who does all of the professional Christian work. And I think that we're in a season in our culture, in America, in Canada, where we need to kind of get beyond that. And we need to help our church family see that we're all called to ministry. We're all ambassadors for Jesus. We've all been given the ministry of reconciliation, not just the guy who gets a paycheck and lives in the parsonage. So, Eric, any parting words for our audience today?
You know, Bart, I think you pretty well nailed it. I think the biggest thing that I would just conclude with is that whether you heard this conversation, you thought, like, this is amazing, I loved every second of this, I can't wait to learn more, or you heard it and it made your skin crawl a little bit, I think it's just worth considering that this is, you know, the future, like you said, for the church in the West. And I think the churches and the boards and the pastors who kind of have the wisdom and discernment to say, how can we begin putting pieces into place now, are going to be better positioned for the church of the future.
Well, Eric, thank you again for joining me on this episode of Revitalize My Church podcast. For those of you who are listening, if you've made it all the way here to the end, thank you for sticking things out. If you haven't yet subscribed wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, make sure that you do that. If you're watching on our YouTube channel, feel free to leave a comment. I monitor those comments and I'd be happy to engage with you there. And I hope that you will go out and get a copy or order a copy of Market Street Pastor from Eric Hoke. Eric, thanks again.
Thanks, Bart. This was a lot of fun.